questions to answer, probably a lot of which are not on this test. I hope all of you were able to fill out that little test. And we'll may or may not collect them. I don't know. We'll see. Some of you say, well, my children are all grown, and that's true. But I'm after something more important than that. The issue to me is not whether or not your children are grown. It's whether or not you can help your local congregation have a better disciplined group of kids, whether they're a grandkid type or, you know, teenage, whatever. Because I think it's a congregational effort to raise up the level of discipline, if you will, in the congregation that you may participate in. Before we get started with all of this, I'd like to ask all of you if you are familiar with a couple of programs that we have in the church that are directed to two specific age groups. First of all is the Noah's Ark Club. Are you familiar with that at all, those of you who are here, the Noah's Ark Club? How many of you are vaguely familiar with it? Can I see your hands? Okay. Some of you are. Looks to me like the majority of you are not. The Noah's Ark Club is in its infancy, but it's off and running. And I might say we're very, very pleased with it. Jerry Cannon from the Denver, Colorado group is the one who's doing all the footwork for it and all the preparation and is doing all the mailing and all the artwork and all of that to make it work. Without her, we wouldn't have the program. This was introduced at the Feast of Tabernacles, and it was a program that is designed to, I think initially, to impact the lives of our younger children. Jerry ages what? All ages, I guess. And this is basically what it's all about. It's this particular little brochure, which the kids enroll in the program and is supervised by the parents, and it's done by correspondence. And what happens is there are lessons that are sent to the children, of which I have a couple of the little lessons here and information. That once they enroll in the program, the children can write for it and it's sent to them, although this is a demonstration and artistic work primarily. And what they do is, with the parents, they go over different matters involving the Bible, and you might guess part of it might be a lot to do with Noah's Ark initially, and other Bible stories. And then once it's completed, they send the completed test, or the little questionnaire, back to Jerry over in Denver. And then she sends them initially this book, and then once they continue to answer all the questions, every time they do, they build an ark. See, inside's an ark, and they build this ark. It's given to them originally, and then once they answer the question, she sends them back an animal that they place on the ark. And the goal is to go through this whole program, and then once it's done, the kids have a Noah's Ark with little animals and all the curiosities that go along with it. So this program right now, I've forgotten how many children are in it, but it's what, how many, Jerry? About, we have about 150 children enrolled in the program. And I'm sorry? Oh, yeah, all around the world. We have, I think, some from, of course, Europe, and then was it the Philippines you told me about? Some children in the Philippines and Australia and South Africa and all over. So we're very, very excited about the program. We want to inform you about it, and if you need to enroll in it, please feel free to do so. We run a little, I guess we call it advertisements about it in the international news. If you have any questions about it here, you can see Jerry Cannon. She's right up here to my left, your right, in the second row. And we can go ahead and implement this program. It's for all age groups, really. It's in its infancy. We're trying to get it beyond where it is. But it, obviously, children who are teenagers are not necessarily interested about you know, building an ark. They want to drive it. They want to drive an ark when they get up to be teenage. But we're learning as we go along, but we want all of you to know that that program is there. Any questions about it while we're all here together? And since I've got Jerry here, she can answer. Anybody have any questions? Colleen? Okay, just send it into the home office, because what we have, Diana, my secretary, she gets all these. Yeah, send it to me and send it. Attention, Noah's Ark. The Noah's Ark Club. The Noah's Ark Club. And, you know, to our address there in Tyler. And then there are we collect them there, and then we send them on up to Jerry, and then she processes them. She's got it on a computer up there and sends it back out to the kids. And it's really quite an exciting program, because the kids are getting something in the mail. And the material is all read over and supervised by a number of us, Jerry Sertin and myself. Van Stinson gets involved a little bit, and then I read through the material as best I can. It's over my head, but I enjoy doing it. And it's very artistically done. It's professionally done. I think I guess I could show you some of the things in here. But this is a scroll with Mrs. Noah here, and the whole thing is approached from the viewpoint as if Mrs. Noah was telling the story. See, first person. And she has several creatures that are developing on the ark. They're developing their own little story, a little mouse. What's that little mouse's name? It's called Ussie. Yeah, there he is, little Ussie. And then you got this elephant that, you know, if an elephant can be cute, this one is. And his name is Mo. I hope nobody here has a name Mo, because that might hurt your feelings. And then there's a little cat in here, too, isn't it? What's the cat's name? The cat's Mr. Snoopy. Mr. Snoop. And so it's all well illustrated and done professionally. And I think your kid, there's the elephant. You can see all the elephant. It looks like a lovable Dumbo. And did you ever see an elephant sneeze is what this little caption is about. But the kids will love it. And it gives you, as a parent, an opportunity on a Friday evening to sit down with your children and just spend some quality time with them and go over and discuss it and talk about things that are good and healthy and, if you will, spiritual, because they identify with things, animals, water, and boats. But you can see this is very nicely done, and this can be mailed out to your children. This initiates the program. You send back the answers to their questions to the Mrs. Noah's Club. We send them on to Jerry. She processes them, then she sends back a little letter. And she sends letters to the children. You know, howdy, how are you doing? Get a little note from Mrs. Noah, which is somewhat special. The kids like that. So it's a good program, and it's in its infancy, but it's off and running, and we want all of you to know about it. And we'd like you to, especially the ministers and hosts, to spread that information on to your churches or your groups, so that there are parents there that need it. They can get their children enrolled. The Noah's Ark Club down in Tyler, Texas. The other group I'd just like to mention quickly, and that is we do have a growing CGI's network. CGI is CGI Singles, CGI's, and this is something that also basically developed. It's been in the works now for a while, but they have begun to organize themselves quite effectively, and I think we have about 100 or 150 singles across the United States that are networking together, and I know some people say, well, I wonder what that's all about. It is not a Lonely Hearts Club. That is not what it is, but it's comprised of all types of singles, whether we're talking about people who have never been married before, people who have been married and divorced, people who are widows or widowers. We have every type of age group involved, from high teen, I believe, to probably, I don't know what the oldest member is, 85 years old. And you have to appreciate the candor and the honesty of some of these people. One fellow wrote to Jerry the other day and said, listen, the reason, I'm paraphrasing, but the reason why I'm 80 or 70-something years old, the reason why I'm writing is I'm looking for a wife. That's pretty forward. That tells it like it is. And at least we can appreciate his honesty. But that's not what the CGI's is all about. It's an opportunity for single people across the United States to be networked together and to learn who each other is, to learn about each other's needs, whether it be a need for prayer, or maybe somebody's looking for a job, or they want to get together for a social, they want to do something regionally. And it is growing, and it is so far, I know Mr. Armstrong is aware of it, Mr. Dart, all of us in the home office, and the program is off and flying. We have a little bulletin that we send out, and it's divided into two groups, those that are members of the church and have ministerial approval, and they can be actually involved in a directory, which we have not yet published, but it's getting close to being published. And then we have another aspect of it, which is just being a part of the CGI, which is not being in the directory and just being a recipient of the newsletter. So if any of you are singles and would like to be involved in that, or you know singles in your church, be sure and do so. You know, let them know about it. Any questions about that little network? Okay, most of the singles here know about it and are participating and are conducting themselves, as we have said last evening, in a Christian fashion, and that's wonderful. We like that. All right, now let's talk about child rearing a little bit. I want to ask a couple of questions of my audience. How many of you in this audience have your children grown? Those of you who raise your hands, would you do it again? All right. How many of you in this audience do not have your children reared yet? Of those, will they be quiet during this presentation? I hope they will. You know, that's one thing I worry about. Anytime you get to talking about child rearing, and there's a child that's going to break out during the services. Really, if we have an outburst during services, we'll just bring them up here and flog them. And we'll teach the meaning of discipline. No, we are not going to do that. As I mentioned the other day in passing this exam, this little fun test, my goal here is to direct our attention, however short it may be, to an increasing problem in our church, and that is the need for discipline. And actually, the problem is lack of discipline in our church. And it demonstrates itself to me in a couple of areas. Number one is basically disrespect that I see of children for their parents. And secondly, a disrespect I see in children for God's way. And I don't know if they are synonymous and hand in glove, but there's got to be some linkage in there somewhere. And so I'd like for us all to talk about it here today, have a little bit of fun in answering this child rearing test, and see if, in going through this, if we can acquire a little bit of knowledge. Now, you'll see on the board I've listed three types of parents. Those who mean well and parent well. That's all of us, right? Those who mean well and parent poorly. And the third category is those who don't mean well and don't parent well. And I hope there is no one in this audience that fits into that group. I would like to suspect that the first two categories are the ones where the majority of us are going to find ourselves. In the second category of those who mean well and parent poorly, why would those of us who have the knowledge of God's truth, why would we be parenting poorly? Let's just ask God, why? What's missing? What do we need? What's lacking? Why would we parent poorly? I mean, we know how important it is to please God with our lives and our child rearing and what our kids do. I mean, why would we not do that? Who knows? The parents themselves don't have training. All right? They don't know what to do. All right? Okay, what else? Okay, that's certainly a possibility that the parents can be in poor health. And you lose it? And you lose what? Oh, you lose. It's paddle time. Is that you can get angry. That's right. You have six. That's right. Okay, Mr. Justice? Yeah. That's one of our questions. Yeah, it takes a lot of effort and a lot of work to be a parent. Yeah, parents take the easy way out, okay? Actually, this is going to be quick. We're not even to question one yet. Yes, sir?
Doesn't that, though, fall back to the training that we have?
That's right. Yeah. In other words, I will say this. Yes, the training we've had, but I know in going through Ambassador College, if I may use that as an example, one of the things that really affected my life was the child rearing booklet. And I read it carefully. I outlined it. I diagrammed it. I looked at it. And as I talked to Mr. Armstrong, there were a couple things in there that I did not do with my children. But basically speaking, and I hope this doesn't sound radical to you, but I reared my children with the direction found in the child rearing booklet. And I have a copy of it. The part that I struggled with, although I don't have it with me, the part that I struggled with and when my wife and I first had our oldest daughter, Tanya, you remember Mr. Armstrong talked about the one and two finger business, you know, and the little child, and boy, that little sweet thing. I remember we were going to the Feast of Tabernacles, and she was in the back of the car, and we'd been driving all the way from Salt Lake City all the way up to Wisconsin Dells, and she had been a perfect passenger. But, you know, little kids get tired and weary of riding in the car. And I think she had a little touch of diarrhea. Ooh, that doesn't sound good after lunch, huh? But I remember I had to make that decision whether or not to do it and when to do it. I knew I wasn't going to do it when she was first born, but I knew there would come a time when I'd have to spank her or chastise her or whatever, a love tap or whatever that was. And I remember doing it. And if I had it to do over again, I think I probably did it just a little bit too early when I disciplined Tanya at that age. Boy, my conscience really worked on me, too, afterwards, you know, driving on up there. But I say that to let you know that I've been, you know, I practiced the child rearing booklet, the one that Mr. Armstrong wrote a long, long time ago. And I've also read a number of books trying to be a responsible parent about disciplining children. And that has augmented the basic instruction because the bottom line, almost everything I needed for child rearing was in that booklet because that booklet was based upon the Bible. And the Bible talks about training up your child in the way he should go, and when he's old, not depart from it. It also talks about what kind of an attitude should children have toward their parents in the commandments. That children are to honor their mother and their father, that their days may be prolonged upon the land which God will give them. And so when you get to looking at it, it talks about this rod, and not Rod Meredith either, but rod that will drive foolishness from a child. And I sit around with amazement a lot of times in discussions, because my children are a little bit older now, and I don't have to discipline nearly as often as I used to, but I hear these discussions from parents. I heard one not too long ago. Let's see how we would solve this. The discussion was the child was just sort of a crawler and getting around and in the house, and so they would come over to someone's house, and any time that these people who invited these people over knew this little child was coming, they would take up all their knickknacks that were within arm's reach and put them out of sight. Is that what you should do? Yeah. Mr. Justice has obviously been through this. What he's saying is that if you have an undisciplined child coming into your home, if you want to salvage it, probably you should put up your things. But let's narrow it down a little bit more. Let's say it's your home. And I don't know, I've been through this personally with my children when we were rearing it, and I'm with others. But I was over at a home the other day, and this little toddler, for example, was going up the TV set, and was fascinated with this little knob on the TV set while I was watching it. On, off, on, off, on, off kind of a thing. And what amazes me is that moms and dads can watch this and miss it. You know, I'm sitting here, I'm blinking, and they're not even aware of what's going on. And I'm looking at the parent thinking, well, when are you going to intervene before I go crazy? And then nothing is done. I remember one time, this happened at my home, and my wife and I are just, Mr. Justice, this is exactly what you're talking about. We didn't have a whole lot of nice things at all, but we had finally invested in a fairly decent wood coffee table. And we had invited a woman and her child over, I think it was for late afternoon tea or something like that. And so we were over there, and I was sitting there watching this thing, and this child was roaming around in the home. And the next thing I knew, she had taken her baby powder out. You know, she'd somehow gotten in her diaper bag and gotten the baby powder and had dumped it on our coffee table. And, I'm sitting there, and I'm sort of alarmed, and I don't want to hurt her feelings, and I just sort of caught my breath, and Judy, my wife, was there. She didn't know what to do either. And next thing you know, the child got up and stood on the coffee table in the baby powder and jumped up and down. And what amazed me is that the mother didn't even see it. I mean, she was there, but it's like it wasn't happening. And I don't know how she missed it, because my look was, I was horrified. My wife was horrified. How did the woman miss the fact that this little tyrant was jumping up and down on our coffee table in baby powder? I mean, you know, if you dump baby powder, it does powder. She missed it. She just didn't, she didn't get it. So after I broke the child's legs, no, I didn't do that. I did not do that. I want you to know that, but... I did what most parents do, I guess, when somebody comes over and their children's undisciplined. I did the wrong thing. I didn't say anything. And so the child got away with it, and the mother just packed up the child and the baby powder and went home. This is what we're talking about. And, the sad thing about it is I never invited them over again. And that's what's so sad about that. But coming back to this thing, how many of you, when you were rearing your children, taught them the meaning of the word no? And I mean really taught them the meaning of the word no. That when you said no, that didn't mean if, maybe, perhaps, consider it, think about it, we'll talk about it tomorrow. It meant no. Just meant no. And if I can say, if there's one thing that I see as a general mistake that parents make today, especially young ones, is they don't teach their children the word no. Now, God teaches us the meaning of the word no, does he not? And I've always felt that whatever God teaches us as adults, probably there's a carryover to our children. And there are just certain things God says no about. Just no. And he says that if you violate that no, there's going to be a consequence. And so that's the way it was, at least with my children. I know with some here. And I want you to know I've made my mistakes with my children. Made a lot of them. And some of them I'm really sorry for. All of us make mistakes as parents. And I'll probably make a whole big number of more mistakes as time goes along. I hope not. But one thing that I know I need to do and continue to do is when I say no to my children. That does mean no. Let's solve the problem here with all sorts of things. But if somebody's in the house, if you've got your children, can you teach your children not to bother the knickknacks at low height? You really can. For those of you who raise your hands with parents with children, realize that you can. You really can. The reason why I know you can is I did it. And if I can do it, you can do it. But I'm going to tell you what it takes. Mr. Justice said it. It takes work. And it's going to take you doing something that you don't want to do because you love your child and you think if you squat it, it's going to hurt it. And it does hurt it, but it doesn't hurt it more than it ought to. I'm not talking about beating. I'm talking about take that rod, if you will, or take your little hand or your fingers and swat that child and teach it the word no. I know one lady I was talking with, she had big nose and little nose. And the little child would, you know, lying was a big no. Breaking a knickknack was a little no. Little nose, big nose. I mean, you know, I'm sitting around there. She'd say, now that's a little no. I'm confused. Much less that little toddler wondering, well, what is a little no? You know, going along through there. When I read what God says, God makes it pretty clear. You know, yeses and noses and all that kind of thing. So you can teach your children, however small they are, they're toddlers, and it's sweet, and they'll be happy. They do not have to pull down your china crystal and play with it. They just don't have to do it. They do not have to pull your dog's ears. They just don't have to. I mean, just let the dog bite them once, and they'll probably not pull them anymore, see, because they got some kind of a reaction. See, that's what stops that thing. All right, well, let's go on here. I want to try to answer these questions real quickly. We could go have a lot of fun with this. Basically, though, I want all of us to fit into these categories. And remember, teaching your children the word no starts when? Starts in the very beginning. Now, a little child when it's first born isn't capable of advanced reasoning. You know, you don't diagram sentences for it when it's 1 week old. That doesn't work. You love it. You cradle it. You carry it next to your chest. You just fawn over it, if you will. Just love it to death. Because the child needs that bonding. As a matter of fact, the first question here I think is interesting. Decades of experience with growing children has taught teachers, it should be here, that a child is still too immature, too much a little infant to really be placed in the daily classroom environment before he is how old? 5, 6 years old, one or the other, 5 or 6. So if you're grading that for yourself, 5 or 6 years old. I'm going to just run through this thing quickly and try to get these answered, then we'll come back to discuss some things. List at least one of the most important habits that will aid your child in learning. Sit still, listen. Those are the top two that I know of. Sit still and listen. You know, you can teach your child to sit still in church. You think you can't, but you can. That child can sit still. And I don't mean they just, you know, just sit still and they're rigid, but I mean that they're not, you know, well, who's that going under the chair? All this kind of thing. You can teach them to basically stay in an area. And by the way, they don't need a U-Haul van full of toys. Have you ever seen that? I mean, I've come into congregations where I've pastored and all that, and it looks like that section is some kind of an erector set over there. You know, you have to come around because there's blankets up there, and there's toys, and there's little items of interest, little motorcycles and all that. Well, there's a time and place for that, but you don't have to take up all that room. You can make a child sit. You really can, and they can be happy. They can be happy. If I might use an experience which I remember, because I'm really sort of a softy, if the truth be told. I really am. But my wife was really strict. See, she was a meanie. No, she wasn't. But she wanted a child that responded. And I remember one day in church services, now this again would have been our oldest one, Tanya, but she was about third row deep, and all of a sudden she wanted to make some noise, a little bit too, I don't mind a little bit of noise, you know, but not a lot of loud noise. And so she made some loud noise, and Judy just said, she looked at her and she said, stop it. And Talia thought, this is the time to try Mom out. And so she just continued on. I mean, Judy, I mean, right then. I mean, right now. Not after church. Right then she yanked her up. Right there, stood up, grabbed her. And Tanya thought, the end of the world had come. And she looked at her and she said, oh, Mommy, I won't do it. And Judy said to her, I know you won't. We're going to go out and I'm going to make sure you don't. And she took her right out of there, and you know, little children, is they didn't know what to grab. She was grabbing her mother's mouth, her mouth. She was worried, you know, anything to stop this spanking from happening. And they went back there, and they had a little spanking, and they came back, and all the tears dried up, and she sat down there the rest of the service, and there was no problem at all. You know, we as parents are afraid to do that. And I know it's embarrassing. It really is embarrassing the first time you do it. But you've got to just realize if you don't do it the first time, you're going to have to always be embarrassed. Because having a child that's unruly and noisy in the congregation is disturbing everybody. Not just the person next to you, but everybody in the church. I've seen it on Mr. Armstrong, for example, in personal appearances in church services. I use personal appearances. But not too long ago, we had a personal appearance, and over to his right, there was a child that was absolutely out of control. And it affected him, and it affected the entire group. Somebody should have said something to the person. It's not going to be me. I'm not going to say anything to him. But somebody should have said something to him. You know, should have been. They should have had enough knowledge themselves to do it. The point I want to make is, if you're going to discipline, you decide what you're going to do. And this is an important key. And that is, I know when disciplining our children was at stake, my wife and I sat down and decided how we were going to do it. We talked about it. What are we going to do? And we decided, and I told Judy she could handle it quite nicely. But I will tell you this, in disciplining my children, the one thing which I have always decided was this, is that when Dad gets involved, it is not just a disciplinary session. It is an event. I mean, the last thing my children want me to do is to get involved, because I'm overemphasizing in the world. My kids, they'll do just about anything to keep from disappointing their father, because they know that when I finally get involved, it's pretty serious. You know, it's pretty serious. And I have not had to spank my children since last night. You have to bear with me. I mean, you really do. All right, to listen and to be still. All right, list at least four of the 14, or any number, but the four characteristics or traits children need to be taught at home before starting school. Who can give me a few? I'm sorry? Sharing? Toilet training. There's a good one. Oh, I know why Nancy would say that. Nancy is a school teacher. That's the reason why toilet training is so important. They come to school and, yes. All right. Obedience. Respect. Somebody else said an important one, which was honesty. Teaching them to be honest. Listening. Okay. Being attentive. There are any number, but we've hit enough. You know whether or not yours fits into that. Characteristics. I mean, if you've got on there handle guns, that's not what we're after. Which age group is it that sociologists term the most dangerous age, or the dangerous age? Well, they call those the terrible twos, but again, this may be, but teenage years are particularly dangerous. See, particularly dangerous, because what can kids do at age 15? They begin to drive cars and, I'm sorry? About anything, yeah, they do about anything. Question five, Proverbs 19:13, a foolish son is the... Do you all know what that means? A foolish son makes a mockery. He causes disaster. Proverbs 29:15, the what and what? The rod and gives wisdom, but a child left to himself brings his mother. The very first form of government with which the child comes in contact is the government within the home. Family be close, home. Parents should again realize that the time to begin training their children is at birth. Hebrews 12, verses 5 through 6, despise not you the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when you are rebuked of him, for whom the Lord loves, he chastens. All right, question 10, the toy that most excites a boy is a... That's right, girl is not the answer. The answer is gun. The gun. Now, that may be a little bit different now with Nintendo. Yeah, I would have to say that in the last couple of years, Nintendo is probably... So we'll grant... But Nintendo's got guns in it, you know. But electronic guns. So, yeah. But we'll count Nintendo. All right. Question 11. There's an extra ingredient that makes any type of entertainment more enjoyable, and what is it? Work. Work. Mm-hmm. Anything close to that?
Enthusiasm
will be fine. Question 12. For a child, the greatest enjoyment in play is what? Okay. That's all true, but I'm sorry? Playing with another child. Playing with another child. You can take a child that's bored. They've got Nintendo, they've got erector sets, they've got blocks, and all of a sudden you just bring a child in. They won't even use any of that stuff. They just play with the other child. Multiple choice. What is the most important thing to teach your children before they go to school? How to learn. How to learn. The next one, the greatest key to learning is proper discipline is the greatest key to learning. Having patient parents doesn't make for good learning. It can. Proper discipline. Which of the following is the means by which we as parents encourage foolishness? All of the above. E. Number four. Or is it? Okay, I've got a different tale. Okay, what was it? D. All right. Most children learn their disrespect for the law from whom? Their parents. And I'd like to stop just for a moment to talk about that. I hope all of you realize that. I know that there's a tremendous influence from television. I'm the first to agree with that. But I'll just tell you this, that my personal observation is that you need to watch that too, but what you need to watch the most is yourself. Because little boys, especially little girls, they imitate mom and dad over and above the television set because mom and dad are very, very important to them. And I know one time I really got a kick out of this. This was at our office, and I don't know how old Mike Lallon, that's Mark Armstrong's son, was. But we were noticing in the office that he was going around. He had little shorts on, and he was going around, and he was doing this. And it was like he was trying to find something, you know. And Mark looked at him, and all of a sudden we didn't know what it was. And then we found out what it was because we looked at Mark, and Mark was standing there with his hands in his pockets like this. And his little boy, Michael Allen, was trying to imitate him, see, just like that. And he couldn't find it, so he was just, you know, he was going around. But he was still trying to find out where to put his fingers. You know, this experience the other day, one of the biggest things that I deal with my children is the element of trust. Trust and respect is just absolutely paramount in my family. And every once in a while, my children, this is just a little thing with me, I don't like policemen being called cops. I mean, it's just a little thing with me because when I grew up, cop was somewhat of a negative slanderous or negative word. It's not necessarily today. So I've always tried to instruct my children not to call the police cops. So the other day we were at the Walmart down in Tyler, and my youngest daughter was sitting in the front, and my oldest daughter and her best friend was in the back, and we saw a policeman. And so right out of their mouth they said, "Well, there's a cop." And I said, "Well, now let's not be calling them cops." I said, "Let's call them a policeman." And I got to thinking about thought, well, that might be a little bit harsh, but no, I'm going to let it stand because that's the way I've always been about it. So we got to talking about it. I said, "What other names could we call them?" And so they, you know, they're throwing around, you know, we'll call them this, that, and the other thing. And I said, "Now, what would we call a policewoman?" And my youngest one said, "We'll call her a copette." Lost again. Did not succeed. We're still working on that one. But teach, realize your children are going to, if I call the policemen cops, guess what my children are going to call them, especially when I'm not around. See, I can say, don't call them cops, but if I call them cops, they may not call them cops when I'm around because they know they might get spanked, but when I'm not there, guess what they're going to call them? Isn't that right? Children imitate their parents, you see, and they adopt the attitudes toward humor, toward government, toward politics, toward ministers, toward church, toward religion. They get it from the parents. It's not something that they read or study. They pick it up. And that's the reason why, as parents, you've got to be so careful about what comes out of your mouth. And your children will pick up on that. Okay, going along quickly then. Which of the following is not true? Question number 5 under that second section. It is not true is D. Question 6, which of the following is not contained in the Bible? I think there was a typographical misspelling on your paper, but do you know which one it is? It's D. Spare the rod and spoil the child is not in the scripture. Number 7. Which of the following is not true? Is it C? What is it? I think I've got the wrong. It's C? Let me see the test because I think I've got the minor out of sequence here. Okay, question number 7. Which of the following is not true? A baby's habits are formed by association. That's, you know. Never too young to learn is truer in reverse. Never too old to learn. That is not true. B. Isn't it? Never too young to learn is truer in reverse. Never too old to learn. That is not true.
Are you ever too old to learn?
No, you always learn. On to number 8. That's an extra credit. On that one, A, B, C, and D works. No, actually, the reason I'm going on, I would have to look at it. I don't want to take the time now. Diana, my secretary, and I, we went over that question. She said, this can't be true. And I said, you're going to change it, huh? She changed it. So whatever's on there is her fault. Okay, now, question 8. Which of the following is true? C. In order to teach your children, you will need to apply constant diligence and never failing attention to your duty. You know, there's a lot of truth, if I might talk about that, for the people who have little children. I remember the night, and Mr. Armstrong used to talk about it and encourage it in the booklet, but he used to tell us that there would come a time when your child would test you, that they would test you, and you had to get through this test, and if you didn't, they'd win. And I remember the night that it happened with my oldest daughter, Tanya, because it was almost an all-nighter. And, you know, it was just a matter that she wanted to get her way. And I forgot what it was now because she wasn't very old. But I was in there with her, and I would discipline her, and I would leave, and I would come back and discipline her. I don't mean, you know, I'm not spanking her, but I'm letting her know she wasn't getting her way. And I would tell her no, and I would spank her bottom once or twice, and she would just do whatever it was. I really had forgotten what it is now. And it went on for hours. And she was not abused, don't admit, but I mean, she knew that Dad was in for the long run. And after that night, when I said no, she knew no. And she didn't want to go through that anymore. And it's an interesting thing, too. I know my oldest daughter's not here to say anything about this. But she was about 14, and all of a sudden, boys, that scourge and curse that enters into all women's lives, 13 or 14, began to show itself around our home. And I got awfully worried about it. I'm not exactly sure why. It may have had something to do with the way I knew I was at one time. And so I was watching her, and I thought, okay, I'm going to give Tanya a chance to really prove herself here and to see how she handles it. And so she did it like most 13 or 14 years old. She tried to stretch the rules as far as she could. And so finally, I came home one day, and I grabbed her. And I said, Tanya, I grabbed her by the arm. I said, come here. And I got stern with her. And I mean, her eyes got big as donuts. And we walked into the master bedroom, and I set her down on that bed, and I said, now, you're going to listen to me for a while. See, and I don't normally talk to her that way. And she sat there, and she listened, and I talked, and I carried on, and I raised my voice. I did all the things I thought that I should have done. And she sat there, and I said, now, you got a decision to make, and I want that decision made by tomorrow morning about this young man. Because I thought it was a bad influence, see, on her. And I said, I want you to decide. So it was really interesting the next morning. My daughter, I said, well, why'd you decide? Actually, no, it wasn't the next morning. It was even later on that night. I said, I came in there. She said, Dad, I've already made up my mind. And I said, well, what is it? She said, well, Daddy, she said, I want you to know I'm not going to even talk to that guy anymore. And I said, well, why? And she said, because I have never been in this much trouble in my whole life. See, and I like that because she knew that it took a lot for her old dad to get that upset. See, and now and since then, of course, we've laughed about it and carried on about it and really enjoyed it together because she realized she just got caught up in this initial 13, 14 year old romance kind of a thing, and yet the only thing to stop her was Dad at that moment because you know my wife and I are divorced, but. My wife had been there, it might have been a little bit different. But no, Dad was there to stop, and then Grandma was there. We were doing battle. But the thing that got it was, is she knew she was in big trouble. okay? And she didn't want the consequences of pursuing that way. By the way, I don't know if you find this interesting, I have never taken a privilege away from my children yet. I've never had to. We've never had to get up to it. Now, maybe that'll change next week because she's not here with me and I don't know what she's been into while I've been gone. But I'm not a bargainer. I don't bargain with privileges. That's just not my thing, you know. Maybe one of these days I might have to. Mr. Justice? Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. You're exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, all of you would... How many of you have more than one child? Okay, would you agree with Mr. Justice's statement that they're all really different from each other? And so one, you can do one thing with one, and then the other one, you got to, you know, it's like the old Bill Cosby routine. You know, one was called... what was her name? One was called Joanna or something. The other one was Jezebel. You know, one was good and one was evil. You know, one was trouble and one was no trouble at all. The children are that way. And you have to, as a parent, you've got to work with them according to their nature. And some take more discipline than others. But my point is, if I may encourage all of you, regardless of the nature of your children, at least do something. And my opinion, observation is a little bit, that we as parents are letting our children just have complete free run, especially in church. And that's not worshiping God correctly. I personally don't think so. To come to church and have the service dominated by a child is not going to church for the right reason. Going to church and letting God be the dominant figure and the message and the service, that is. Tom? Okay. Yeah. That's correct. Yeah, it's not fair to the children to let them run free in church. That's teaching them poor habits. And they shouldn't, in my opinion, there's no reason for it. You know. Somebody get my daughter. She's running back. No, she's running back. She might be out there. Let me go ahead and get through these quickly so we can see how we did. Everybody's got one right, I know, the one I gave. Nine. Question nine. Which of the following is the pitfall parents normally don't fall into? D, none of the above. Most parents do fall into all those things. Number 10, which of the following is not true? A. Number 11, any parent who is making a constant display of spanking his children in public, in a restaurant, or in church while attempting to get the child to be quiet and sit still is merely advertising what? B, that their child has never been taught to do these things at home. That's what that's demonstrating. Now, every once in a while, you do have to just, you know, they're going to do something out in the supermarket or at the dinner table, wherever you might be, and you just have to rise to the occasion. But if it's time after time after time, then the child has not been disciplined at home. Which of the following is true? Question 12. I'm sorry? A. That's right. Now to the true or false. Number one is true. There are times when your children should be placed into a good nursery school. That question can be debated because there is inheritance here, but basically what I'm after here is that a well-disciplined child is going to have the skills basically ingrained within it about to be a listener, hopefully will be encouraged to read and sit and that type of thing. They'll have a better chance of being a good student. Number three is true. That is so true. Number four is false. Spanking is still effective on a child who has passed the age where he will repent through physical punishment. What do you think is the final age to quit spanking your children? When they... I think 39 is about right. When they leave home, right? There does reach an age, especially in teenage years, you know, when a child is bigger than mom is, and that becomes a problem, but there does reach an age where there's perhaps a better way to do it. Number five is false. If your mate is unconverted, you are to assume the role as the head of the house. Now, again, we could be talking a lot about that, but basically what I mean is that in a home where you have a husband and wife, even though the husband is not in the church, he is still the head of the house. Okay. Number six is true. All children are potential juvenile delinquents. And so are some parents, too. Seven is true. And I want to emphasize that we as parents should teach our children to show respect to any and all elders. Would you all practice that in your church with your little children? Let's have some respect in our churches for adults, for the elderly, for those that are handicapped, for those that are in wheelchairs, for whoever it is that's older. We need that. The Bible recommends that. The Bible supports that. Let your children be taught to show respect. Now, what do I mean by that, to show respect? Mr. Lamb?
Be respectable first.
Well, yeah.
Be respected.
Yeah, he says they should be respectable first to be respected. Oh, you mean the adults need to be respectable? Well, that's true, too. But even so, I think I've taught my children to be respectable even to adults who are not respectable up to a certain point. Yeah, that's right. What I'm talking about is, listen, don't teach your children not to run into older people or even into us younger ones. Teach them. Do you think it's wrong for a child of 5 or 6 years of age to call an adult a Mr. or Mrs.? I mean, is that out of line? Again, I'm surprised sometimes at what little children will do. They'll call anything but Mr. or Mrs. I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. Number eight, false. I know some of you don't have the test, so you just have to listen along. Number nine is false. Number 10 is false. Number 11 is false. Number 12 is true, though that was a silly one. Doctors say that age 16 is really sweet 16, and children become happy, good-tempered, and self-assured. If anybody put false on that, I mean, that's what they did. So they used to teach that, by the way. Of course, it's false. That's not what happens. But the actual answer, believe it or not, was true. This was back in the 60s. Remember the Spock era? They used to teach that Sweet 16 was really special, but of course, it's not true. So, number 13, because anger and resistance are the natural responses to authority, they should be considered right for your child to have. What do you think? False. Are your children going to have anger and resentment? Yes. Should it be encouraged? No. When your child throws a temper tantrum, what should you do? Just throw yourself down on the floor and do it with them? No. Reminds me of a story I heard one time of a fellow that he was in the market pushing this little boy along there, and this woman, and he was saying, "Now be quiet." He said, "Be quiet. Stay calm. Keep control of yourself." And the woman admired that, and she went up to his name was Bill and said, "Well, boy, I really admire what you're doing here with your child here, that you're keeping, be quiet." And he said, "Well, listen, it isn't for the child, it's for me. Keep control of yourself." Number 13 is false. And number 14 is false. Now, the essay question I thought was important. There was a word left off. You are a woman and you have growing sons, but your husband should be deceased. It's not on your copy, but it's in there. What do you do to help your sons to develop into a man's world? Anybody have some suggestions? Join the Boy Scouts is not a bad idea. Mr. Fowler? Appropriate male company. Provide them an appropriate role model. Okay? Could be an uncle. It could be a minister even. Okay? It could be grandfathers. Sure. In other words, they need to have male contact. Yes, ma'am. Ms. Usward? Yeah, you should definitely do that too. But the one thing I think, and I can speak from it from a man's viewpoint, because my mother and father were divorced early on, and I didn't have a father in the home. And I role modeled myself after the local minister. That's who was a big role model in my life, because he took me underneath his wing, so to speak, and cared for me, taught me about sports, took me out on the ball diamond, taught me to play softball. He used to take me on these long drives over to the other church, and we used to play all these ministerial games, which I hated. But at least, I just hated it. I mean, because they knew the whole Bible, and I didn't even know how to get to church yet. And we would go all the way over there to this little church, and we played. I just hated it when he would ask me to go, because I knew we were going to play animal, vegetable, mineral. but it probably was good for me. You know, I don't eat vegetables to this day. No, I do. But I role modeled after him, and I also role modeled after some of the men in the church. I really did. And that's what we're talking about. Yeah, realize a little girl needs a woman to role model out if the wife is not there, but the son needs a role model too. And because they will pick one up. Whether you provide them one or not, they're going to pick one up. Right. Okay, number two, is it right for your children to pretend? If so, why? If not, why? All right, it depends. I knew that would be the first answer. Yeah, there's an extreme here, isn't there? Right, children are going to pretend anyway, because the word pretend has a lot to do with your imaginations. We all have imaginations too. We just have to, the Bible says, to control our imaginations and to bring all of our thoughts into captivity and to the obedience of Jesus Christ. Now, a child can't do that, but they should have some instruction. I mean, I think when you come home and he's standing there dressed up like Rambo, that's a little bit of an exaggeration. Get a hold of his imagination a little bit. All right? You know, we can go through this and talk a lot about it, but I guess what I really want to impress upon you in having you fill out this question. By the way, would you pass those in? Do you mind passing them in? Because I want to... And grade yourself. Let's see. No, don't grade yourself. I'll grade them when I look at them. Just pass them in. I'd like to see how you answer some of those questions at the end. The one thing that I want to impress upon all of you then, as I close up here and have a few minutes and we could ask some questions maybe just ever so briefly, is that I want to ask all of you that are parents to really give some quality time to your children. Child rearing takes work. It really does. It takes a lot of work. It takes observing. It means that if your child jumps up on the coffee table, see it. You know, it means if you see a bad attitude in your child toward another child, see it and stop it. It means if your child smarts off, stop it. It means if here at this feast that we're having here, the Days of Unleavened Bread are wrapping up, and you see your child not being respectful to an adult, do something about it. Teach them. Work with them. Hour by hour, day by day. And eventually it gets to the point that it pretty much takes care of itself because they know that mom and dad are there, that you're willing to help them. You know, some of us just don't put a lot of time into thinking about it and what our goals and directions are in child rearing. I want to challenge you to do that. But one of the things which I want to also ask some of you to do, because as was brought out here by Mr. Dennis, sometimes we just don't know. If you don't know, ask. Ask somebody. Go up to one of these gray-haired people or bald people and ask them, say, I know you've got your kids raised and they're not in jail. Could you give me some tips on what to do with my children? And probably they will help you. And of course, I realize this is tender, but ask advice. There is, in counsel, there's a great deal of safety and wisdom. And ask moms and dads that have done it before what to do. Go talk to your minister and he should be able to give you a little bit of help. Those of us who don't mean well or do mean well and just don't have the parenting skills, you can learn them. Don't you know that? You can learn them. You can learn to teach them yes or no, right and wrong. You can spend time with them. You can ask them questions and you can hear their answers. Watch who they play with. Watch what comes out of here. Watch what you see in their eyes, in their head. What really is their attitude? One of the things then, as I close, that I want you to realize is that your children, and I don't care what age they are, every one of our children needs to know there's someone on his side no matter what. Can't you all agree with that? Even as an adult, I like to know that when I need someone, that someone is there on my side. And occasionally there is no one else to be there except God. But a little child doesn't know that yet. Not yet. Maybe they'll learn that. So who do they look to be on their side? Mom or dad. And I don't know that there's anything bad enough that the child would do that you would never be there for them, is there? I don't know. I wrestle with that question. I really have. Whether or not my daughters, when they get older, if they really end up disappointing me, and I've got to be careful because I could control them and I don't want to do that. I've got to be very careful not to... You know, I told my oldest daughter she could get married when she's about 41 if I'm there. We have a lot of fun about that. I actually had to tell her to start dating. I know the word dating, let's put that in quotes. To have a social life, because she was so worried about what I thought about it. And so I said to her one day, Tanya, your grades are what they ought to be and you're a good child. I said, I really want you to start having a social life. Boy, a smile crept across her face. And she hasn't been home since. She just wanted the door open and she's out. She's gone, and you know she's not even here this weekend with me. She's out having a social life. So teach your children. I wish we had longer. We know we're going to quit in one more minute. But I wanted to leave you with a question that I was asked, and I want to ask you how you would answer this. It's all part of parenting. I was asked by my oldest daughter one time. I said, "Daddy," and she said to me, "She said, Daddy," she said, "Do I have to worry about dying in a nuclear war?" She asked me that one time. How do you answer that question? What do you think? Yeah, you don't have to worry about it? Why doesn't she have to worry about it? Okay, she can't do anything about it anyway. Anybody want to throw out some other ideas? We're all going to die. Well, now, Tanya, don't worry about it, but you are going to die, and so if it comes earlier, no, that's right. Don't ask any advice from Mr. Dennis. Although, I will say this, Renee is, you know, she's a sweetheart, and your children are as well. Well, I know what you're saying. There's a way to handle it, but I was reading about a little example that was brought up, because this was a question that was introduced to a smaller grade school class, and the teacher had asked this question because she was dealing with it because one of her students had asked about it. And so she asked her students, she said, "Are any of you in here, how many of you in here are really worried about not having a life that comes to a full conclusion because you might be bombed by a nuclear bomb and you might not get to live to be 20 or 21? And every hand in the class went up with the exception of one little hand, one little boy. And she asked the little boy, she said, "All right," she said, "now, Tommy, why aren't you worried about it?" And she said, or he said, "Because my daddy is out every night trying to prevent it." That tells you something, doesn't it? Because he had a relationship with his father, and so he didn't have any fear because of a belief and identification with his father. And I'm sure it could have been with his mother, too. So that comes by a lot of work and a lot of effort. That comes by watching your children. That comes by getting our nose in this book and reading the principles that are in here and applying them. Because there's a lot of books, self-help books about there, but this is the best one I've ever come across right here. This is the best one. And if you read in there in Proverbs and other places, it will absolutely, if you'll talk to your mate about it or you talk to someone else about it, it will give you direction. Just let me caution you to do it in balance. And if there's any question about it, be sure and talk to someone who's somewhat of an expert on it.